Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 105. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the last Forecast of this format and the first Forecast of 2012, Scott.
Whoa, we're like those twins where the one was born in 2011 and the other one was born in 2012. And now they got to have two different yeared birthdays.
And the other twins. Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's true. Happy New Year, by the way, Tom and everybody.
Thanks. We have only 350 some days until we all find out if the Mayan calendar interpretations are correct or not. We can make those kind of predictions. But let's welcome our guests first. Adi Khajuria, tech enthusiast, blogger, and podcaster from the UK. Welcome, Adi, to the show.
Hey, guys. It is an honor and a pleasure to be speaking to you today.
And Happy New Year. Podcast.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
And also joining us, repeat guest, we'll get to why that's okay in a minute, Ayaz Akhtar, host of This Old Nerd and some shows on TWiT.
Yeah, a couple of shows on TWiT. I'm on a show with you every now and then.
Yeah, what's that?
Tech news, something or other. And then there's Ion on Fridays, which I'm psyched about.
Right, absolutely. Check it out. Fridays, well, you're moving your time, right?
Yeah, after CES, we're going to be at 4 o'clock. So when you want to wind down after all the SOPA and evil, horrible tech stories, we have the fun stuff.
Right. The lighter side of technology. That's the show Eileen used to do on ZDTV Radio. The lighter side.
It's nothing like it, except exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We are going to be changing up the format, as I mentioned. Today will be the last day we do the short-term, long-term, and crazy-ass predictions. After CES, when we come back with Forecast, we'll have a new twist to how we do things. Should we explain that or just let them discover it naturally?
Let's just give them a taste that it will fundamentally change their worldview. No, it won't. Wow. It'll be a small change, a change that is really just formatty, sort of not a huge piece of substance. Otherwise, what I do think about it, I think it will really focus us in on like the beefier middle ground predictions, the ones that really are the bread and butter of the show.
Right.
And it'll let us really flesh those things out and talk back and forth. And we'll maybe leave it at that. I think that is kind of a good way to give them a taste, but it's definitely not going to ruin the show you love. In fact, should I think appreciate it or enhance it?
Yeah, because we've always sort of tried to keep a long distance between repeat appearances on Forecast, because short, long term, crazy. I mean, how many different ones can you come up with? So we want to give people at least a year between appearances. We're going to get rid of that. In the new format, you can come on as many times as you want. Not as many times as you want. Tony has to book you first. It's not going to be maybe we should do a Google Hangout. I don't know.
Maybe not.
All right, let's start with a segment that will continue in the new version of Forecast. Predictions from the listeners. In fact, you kind of want to beef this up. Tim in Arizona wrote in and said, "We've had predictions before about genetically modifying athletes or soldiers, but I believe that within 75 years, in order to remain competitive, it will be normal for the average American citizen to utilize gene therapy drugs to modify their bodies. Their genome could be scanned and processed in about an hour, and a series of drugs would be designed to physically augment their abilities. The drugs will modify the expression of their genes to give surgeons steadier hands, data entry workers longer and more dexterous fingers, nighttime security personnel get natural night vision, and podcasters get the voice of Scott Fletcher." Whoa. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Tim,
wow, that's intense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Sweet. So, you see, I actually want to disclose straight off the bat that I have a problem with writing. I mean, I'm a very slow writer when it comes to, like, just handwriting. I also, what's another word? I not only am I a slow writer, but I also write in a very large font size. I'd say about 18 or 16, maybe. That being said, I'm just thinking, if there was some way to have this kind of DNA correction where I could write smaller and faster, like at bullet speed, I'm all for it. So as long as it doesn't mess around with anything else.
Now, that's the side effects, right? Yeah.
You think, how do you guys feel about, well, first of all, I will say that I think this prediction is not only a good one, but I also think it's an accurate one. I also think that his cursory mention of athletes at the top of the email should be focused in on a little bit. I believe that the only way to truly get rid of cheating when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs in sports is to let them in and make that part of the competition. That's controversial. People freak out about it. But otherwise, we're just going to have cheaters who are ducking under the radar of current testing methods until they aren't anymore. And then we just, you know, drag them out in front of everybody and say, look at this cheater here we have. I think instead we get to a point where part of the competition is how good is your on-staff biochemical expert that's helping your athlete perform better than some other athlete, and it becomes part of the competition. That being said, if there needs to be a limit for the other stuff. So if I can write really fast, or if I can type really fast, or whatever the augmentation is, there ought to be probably some sort of limit to how many of those things you can have. And I hope it becomes a physical limit. Like the human body can only handle so much. At least that's what I hope.
I completely agree with you, Scott, because what I want to say is that, how can I put this? Because it will get to a point where basically these competitions where you see of like the European Athletics Championships, World Championships, whatever, is going to get to a point where it'll become too artificial. And it's just going to mean like as soon as I see someone on the BBC saying, and now it's time for us to cross over to Europe for the Athletics Championships, I'm going to basically say, right, that's it, power off.
I always have advocated the two-league solution, where you have a purist league. It's almost like, you know, you have old-fashioned leagues where they play like, oh, there's no artificial materials. We're going to play by the old rules of the 1800s. You'd have an old-fashioned league that says, okay, we're not going to allow any artificial stimulants, any genetic manipulation. There's an old-fashioned league. And then there'll be the mainstream league, which says, like Scott's advocating, you know, pretty much anything within legal availability is go.
Yeah, but the new league is going to like resemble like NASCAR. So you'd have one guy going at bat, running over. He's got 12 people, you know, poking him with all kinds of weird genetic mutations and things. And then you got to hope that your biogeneticist or whatever you want to call the guy doesn't screw up. Because if you have weird interactions and side effects, you're losing players like left and right during a game. I guess
part of the fun.
You can have clones, I guess, in the background. I have no idea what you would do with this. But I mean, the first thing I keep thinking of is the first trials of these kinds of things. I mean, I know we're kind of doing that now, but if you're going to make this as easy as a soda, or make it something really easy to do, the side effects just seem like it could be a disaster.
Well, it'd be like the 1 hour photo booths, right?
Okay.
You just drive up.
It's not as good.
There's a place in the mall. You drive in 1 hour genetic manipulation. You walk in. It's all about the side effects, though. Did ease have to lead to bad side effects?
Well, I mean, my fear is like with LASIK and things like that, the theory that you could have like halo vision after a while, like that to me scares me enough to not do it.
Not vision like you see in the game Halo, but.
No, not that way. No, you don't get a little map and you don't get.
Because that would be rocking.
That'd be kind of cool, but I'm talking about actually seeing halos around lights like that.
Right, yeah.
To me, I don't want to drive around with that because, I mean, even on the off chance that happens, that you're stuck with that, and I don't want to be stuck with that kind of
thing. But that's true of any kind of surgery that you do. But I guess what you're saying is, I've got lenses, it's good enough, why risk
it? So I would think more, not implants, but maybe more like exosuits and stuff like that for sports and things, instead of it being physically augmenting a body.
The NASCAR thing holds true here. I agree with that, actually. I think that's where we need to take it, because otherwise you end up with a sport that ends up like Futurama's Blurn's Ball or something, where it's just so ridiculous because everybody have kind of overcome the natural wall they hit as human beings, and now they can just do anything. We have to start creating more extreme ways of putting them to the test. The idea of putting everybody in a big mech suit and making football, you know, quadruple the size of the field and put them all in mechs, and you've got engineers and you've got mechanics and dudes and like pit stops and stuff. Oh man, like I would tune into that. That would not bore me in the least.
And so, you know what? Yeah. Dr. Miguel Nicolelis, who we've had on Triangulation, is working on an exosuit that he wants to have ready by, I think, 2014, if I have the date right, to demonstrate that would work with mental control. So you're actually doing, you know, wireless mental control of an exoskeleton, And the idea would be, you know, if your legs don't work, this would allow you to walk. It's that kind of situation. But you're right. I mean, it could also be used for people to just become super strong.
yeah
and
love it.
The other thing I wanted to go into very quickly is not just the athletic side of things, but also I'm completely aware of this whole kind of idea of, you know, the championship gaming series and other kinds of video gaming competitions that are aired live. I'm sure you must have seen this, where you have people playing games like Counter-Strike,
StarCraft,
and many others.
Absolutely.
And this is just going to basically, again, as I said with athletics, it's going to make it artificial, because every time, I mean, every like 5 minutes or even every 2 seconds, it's going to be, oh, boom, there's another great headshot.
Well, it's like, I think it's less like NASCAR. It's more like Formula One.
Okay.
Is the one where you have all the modifications. Whereas stock car, NASCAR, is more similar to the, like, no, you have to use your body. That's the stock. And so, there's a limit to the amounts of changes.
So sports takes the NASCAR Formula One approach.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I think this can actually be done, though, as long as there's some kind of governing body which says, okay, you can do this, but there's a fair use limit, like the DMCA.
Yeah, well,
I know that's a bad example.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. Maybe not working. All right, send us your predictions, folks. Email them, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We are going to feature one at the beginning of every episode of Forecast, so send them in. Let's start with the short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later, and Addy, we'll start with you.
Oh, thank you. You're far too kind. All right, so, you know, basically what it is that we have all these standards such as DLNA, AirPlay, and so on. But the thing is, I predict that somewhere in the next, I'd say, five to 10 years, we're going to have a universal standard that basically allows us to, say, if I've got an iPad, for example, basically any device that has some kind of network connectivity capabilities, we'll be able to say, okay, send my my episode of The West Wing to my TV, or say if I've got a phone of, it doesn't have to be an iPad, but any device, we can basically say, send it to my TV, or if it's music, send it to a wireless speaker or whatever, because I think there is going to be a unified open standard.
And do you think that standard will be embraced by all? Because tends to happen now, the model now is, you know, Apple wants to have its own ecosystem. Android wants to have a more open ecosystem, but still an Android ecosystem where you're writing code for the Android operating system and so on. It kind of spreads from there. How do you get everybody? I mean, it was easy for everybody to all use web standards that they use on their browsers now so that they can, you know, view the web and use it the way it was intended to and adhere to the standards of HTML and all of that, because it was already there and was already the predominant standard. I have to wonder or guess that if that wasn't the case, all parties involved would try to do their own thing and make that the dominant standard. How do you get those guys on board to embrace such an open standard like the one you're suggesting?
That's a good question. Well, I'm not so sure on that one. But that being said, what I do know is that the standard I propose is that you don't need to have an Apple TV. As I said, it's just network connectivity. But I guess the way it is that you'd have to have basically everybody just draw up a charter, you know, have all the big companies meet together on like a day that they're free and say, okay, here's what the standard's going to be like. Do you approve?
I mean, that's what DLNA was about, though. I mean, DLNA was supposed to be the standard. We're supposed to be able to use, we'll flick our picture to our television, or we'll be able to listen to audio with DLNA without having to worry about just these stupid individual standards. Well, I think you're close to I'm thinking we're going to have devices that do a lot more. Like, you'll see DLNA, you'll see AirPlay, you'll see whatever version, I can't remember what Android calls it. You'll see WiDi, you'll see it all in your receiver. I mean, they already do a lot of this stuff anyway. So I'm just thinking, instead of going, yeah, we'll go to one standard, you'll just have a lot more support for all of them, because it's really hard to get like, oh yeah, Apple's going to agree with Intel standard. That'll work. That just hasn't happened yet.
No, it's a lot like having It's like having a standard in social networking, for example. What happens now, some new hot new social networking app or service on the web or something pops up. They don't presume to like try to sway everybody to their new way of doing things with their API and everything else. Instead, they say, come use us. And by the way, you can post all this stuff to Flickr or to Twitter or to Facebook by simply clicking this button, authorizing the app, and boom, all these things are working together. And hey, guess what? Oh, along came Google Plus. As soon as that API is available, we'll make it so you can do that from within our app as well. So I it's already kind of happening. That's a more isolated version of what you're talking about, but it's got to be kind of the same. Everybody's sort of like, well, okay, all these other standards exist or all these other types of things exist. If we want to be a player in this market, we have to support all of those things and also be scalable to the point that if more get added or these things change, we can accommodate those changes or additions.
All right. Well, as I was saying earlier, there's no kind of hard and fast rule that can say that nobody will accept it. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, that it's just got to be executed the right way and it can succeed.
Yeah, that's always the trick, right, with standards. If they are executed the right way and you get everybody on board, they're wonderful. Things like IEEE 1394, things like USB work great because they worked that way. And I hope you're right, Addy, that somebody can crack that and make a standard that gets everybody on board. I hope it works that way.
MP3s are a great example of
that. Yeah, right.
You know?
That was the opposite. Instead of like USB, where they came together and agreed on a standard, MP3 just sort of fell into becoming a standard.
Yeah, it beat out Sony's standard. They had the 8-track thing, and Apple wanted AAC to win. Like, I mean, just people. It's what people ended up using the most, and that's why I'm thinking, like, unfortunately, this is like AirPlay. AirPlay seems to be winning out because people just seem to get it. They're like, oh, I just click this button and it goes to that thing. Well, it runs fine.
Yeah, let's see if Apple lets anybody else use AirPlay though.
My receiver does AirPlay.
That's a trick.
That's a Denon.
Yeah, but I think it makes
Android
sense,
tablets.
Though, to have...
Android what now?
Yes, Android tablets. Yeah,
they make tablets?
That being said, I think that they... Oh, God, I lost... You know, I just lost the thought. But I think that this standard is going to happen. Just what? Watch.
I hope so.
I
hope so, too.
And to put in the words of Steve Jobs, boom... It just works automatically.
I hope you're right. All right, Ayaz, we'll go to your short-term prediction now. Things you think will happen sooner rather than later.
I'm thinking, when I think of these prediction stuff, I'm thinking about what I think is going to happen for myself. And this actually happened. I'm thinking commuter culture is going to be receding a lot because we have the incredible prices on gas. We do have these hybrid cars and things out there. There's a lot of moves towards that. But this idea that we have this sprawl, and this happened in like the baby boom. Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to move out far away. We can have more property. I can just drive into work. And then there's that whole rat race thing that people started hating and griping about. But with these increased gas prices, to go out 40 to 50 miles a day, I know certain people still do that. But I'm thinking there's going to be a lot more of a movement towards just kind of moving together again because this sprawl thing isn't working out financially for a lot of people. So that's what I'm thinking. A lot smaller communities, well, not smaller communities, larger communities, just closer together.
Interesting. So more people moving back to cities, existing infrastructure like that, or do you see any of that changing to the point that, I mean, the complaints or the reason people moved to the suburbs in the first place was A, it was cheaper to do that, but also they just didn't like how compressed everything was or how dense everything was. Any plans in your near future to, I don't know, figure out ways to make city living less stacked, maybe make it more, I don't know. I don't know what the right word is, but just something less than the reason we left in the first place.
Well, it's not necessarily stacking people together in a city. I'm thinking even like just larger towns. I mean, Petaluma is a good example. I mean, I can walk around here. I live a mile from here. I can walk to work. There's stores nearby. I think what happens is, You have a slight compression compared to, you know, a large suburban or like a rural kind of environment, but you do have the ability to still kind of have a little bit of land. You can go to a park. I'm just thinking you probably will mitigate this compression by having a little bit more parks to have the just the access and convenience to go to places instead of having to get in a car, cram everybody together, and get them moving. Either whether you're going to a mall or whether you're going to work, I'm thinking just because of the cost, and everyone's got these stupid sports utility vehicles that are crappy on miles per gallon. It just seems like this is for me personally. I've done this move. I like this. I think this. I'm not the only person who thinks this way. Moving towards nearer to work, just like it was a long time ago.
But technology means that you don't have to move nearer to work.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly,
you can telecommute.
Because I like the idea of in the future, you know, just me sitting in my bed with a laptop and just firing up my remote desktop client, and then boom, I'm at work, just like that.
I know there's some jobs out there that don't let you telecommute. Some jobs will ask you to move.
Construction. I mean, seriously.
There are other positions out there. But yeah, I mean, telecommuting, I think, as much as that's made advancements, there's still a lot of companies out there that want to do face-to-face communications with people. I mean, even though some people are like, we don't like email, we don't like chat, we don't want to use a phone, I want to see you and see if you understand something. It's very hard to replace looking in someone's eyes and go, do you understand what I'm saying? Because this is really important to our company. You need to know what's going on. I mean, I've seen that with schools. They've moved towards this online model. But I'm thinking for communities, they're going to compress.
I'd actually love to see. I know this is very kind of like Star Trek kind of stuff, but here's what I'd love to see. What I'd love to see is basically companies, and this is only if companies have budget for it. I'd love to see them basically saying people, okay, if you're hired, what we're going to do is we're going to send you a teleporter, which you can place anywhere in your house, and then say, and then just simply type in on the keyboard, okay, take me to my work location, and then boom, you're there. And that means, you know, no more excuses for getting late.
You know, I don't want the teleporter because I, like Dr. McCoy, fear it, but I would like the telepresence. Okay, so in other words, whether it's a hologram or some kind of like robotic avatar, I want to do exactly what you're describing without having to actually move my body. So I stay in my house, but I'm able to walk around. I'm able to make like direct eye contact and get the feel of being in the same room mm-hmm. without actually having to travel.
And the disintegration scare me.
I would settle for holocrons in Star Wars. Like even that rough technology would be better than nothing. But I'm kind of with Tom, and I'm also of the belief that I think all these points are correct. I think Iaz is right that we're going to see that happen. What he's talking about will happen, but we will continue to see types of jobs continue to fragment out and pull away from people who need to be in the city, and those that can be done remotely will continue to grow. That we'll see more of that happen.
And then those that have to
physically be there, we'll see them driving into town less.
Yeah, that can happen under a few conditions. Under A, because what it is here in the UK, we have an ISP called Virgin Media. Point is, they're throttling us like crazy. I think that this is going to happen, this whole telepresence thing. So as long as we have internet connections which are A, not traffic-shaped, B, uncapped, and C, super fast, and D, super duper cheap.
Why is your arm missing? I'm on Virgin. I hit my limit. I can't telepresence my arm anymore. Not till next month.
The terrible bandwidth gap.
Unless if it's X64.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor, Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, saving you time, money, and hassle. You can watch science fiction television shows, science fiction movies that describe all the stuff we're talking about. I've been watching Friday Night Lights. I got the first couple of series of DVDs from a friend, Scott. But they have all five seasons available streaming, so I've been eating those up. And what's great is I can pause, go away, come back, resumes right where I left off. I don't have to manipulate things, worry about putting the discs back in or forgetting stuff. Check out Netflix. You can watch it on a Roku. You can watch it on an Apple TV. You can watch it on a PS3, a Wii, an Xbox 360, an iPad, an Android tablet, an Android phone. I mean, there's pretty much almost limitless the number of devices that you can watch Netflix on. Netflix.com/twit gives you a free 30-day trial. So if you've left Netflix or if you've never had Netflix, go try them out. Netflix.com/twit, 30 days for free. See if you like the streaming. And we appreciate their support of Forecast. Let's move
coming
to our
soon to London.
Yes, that's right. It is coming soon to London. Let's move to our long-term predictions. These are the longer view, more the in 100 years sort of predictions. And this time we'll flip it. We'll start with you, Iaz.
Nothing super crazy yet. I'm thinking, this is based on something I saw just recently. I'm thinking every single thing will be online. So no more offline anything. I mean, even building materials will have, every piece will have things like we've seen in your phones. You're going to see accelerometers, temperature sensors, things that can sense vibration. Every single piece will be able to be online at all times. So there won't. So if
you mean
even
everything's
just,
connected. You're, not it's necessarily kind of, no, kind not, of the Internet of Things.
Not
here,
necessarily or? Connected. I mean, they can be. They can be online. They have capability to be, but they don't have to be. You can turn it off, I would imagine. But nothing will be. You can't just get a phone and go, oh, it's offline, unless you just turn it offline. See
gotcha.
What I'm saying?
Everything has the capability
exactly.
of being
so even the, like in this studio, like trusses would have the ability, oh, it's shaking a little, and then you could tell, you know, okay, there's an earthquake going on, or there's just some idiot doing pull-ups.
Or you go into the Truss app and
something like that.
Send a canceling vibration.
You send it out either to on Twitter and go, oh, look, oh, OMG, check out the drop cam. Everything's falling apart, or something like that. But there's a product out there that is on a Kickstarter. It's called Twine, and it's got all these sensors. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably going to get miniaturized like crazy. I could imagine that easily being in the 2x4s I buy at Home Depot or any like piece of Lego if I wanted to use that. I mean, it's... In a, like maybe 100 years, it'd be cheap enough. And I know nanotechnology is coming and everything. But I'm thinking it'd be cheap enough and small enough in about 100 years that everything will have the capability to be online if you want it to be.
I love how I can sense that it's just an idiot doing pull-ups. That's my favorite bit about your sensor technology. Very specific there. I
ripped from
you know
the headlines.
What? This makes perfect sense to me. And why we haven't seen more of it quicker is a bit of a conundrum. I mean, I don't know why,
I'll tell you why.
My refrigerator
I'll
isn't connected to the internet telling me how cold or hot something is. I don't. What's the big holdup, I guess, is the question.
Well, I'll tell you what the big holdup is. It's because I don't want to slag off anybody, but I think it's basically people like your ISPs and the governments and whatever. They're just being too lazy. They've got the money, especially the ISP. They're making tons of profit. So, you know, I encourage the ISPs to stop being lazy, stop drinking your beer and whatnot, and just get to work, make the infrastructure better. You'll have your entire house connected to the internet.
And the other thing, what I was saying...
Get off your sofa.
When I was saying building blocks, I mean, like, there's also this idea that, you know, it's so hard to differentiate your products to a point, like, what do? I keep adding things. So the phone has a sensor or has a little thing that can sense a vibration or things like that. Eventually, it just starts slowly going into everything. I mean, like, if your mug over there can tell you the temperature of your coffee is getting warm, oh, maybe you should take care of that. Or it's getting cold or whatever the temperature is supposed to be. I'm just thinking these are going to just be little added things slowly, 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 that to the point where you're like, okay, well, this bolt seems to have an accelerometer. I don't know why, well, but I guess I could use it.
And Web5356 points out, mesh networks don't need an ISP. And if you have the problem with mesh networks is you're always like, well, how are you going to get a critical mass of things talking to each other enough so that you have bandwidth available? And a mesh network of things like that, if everything just has connectivity capability built into it, all of a sudden your mesh network is much easier because you've got connectivity all around you in every brick. And that solves your problem, Addy. You don't need an ISP. It's just, the internet just happens all around you. I love that.
Yeah, I never needed to build out fiber to curbs either, I would think, if the materials actually had it. Now I'm thinking about this.
You roll fiber to certain endpoints so that you can have some backhaul, and you wouldn't be getting rid of the backbone. But the to the curb that you're talking about, you wouldn't need it anyway. Unless you're really far out in the country.
I'm a dream. I want fast internet everywhere.
I want a Coke. Yeah, I want this Coke can right here. See this Coke can? Diet Cherry Coke. I want
you
this
mean,
to tell me.
Unpaid sponsor soda can?
Right.
Silver can.
Unpaid. But I want that thing to send me a text at 3 o'clock when it's gone. Your Coke is starting to go flat. Did you forget that it's here? That kind of, it seems a little weird on the surface of it, but we're already having other things do this. We want to be told when our DVR has a new show on it, so it pings our phone. We want to be told when lots of things happen. We can tell if our house is being robbed. Baez is right. This is the future, man.
I agree with you, Scott Johnson, completely. I think this also makes sense because we've already seen the iPhone 4S with Siri. In fact, I also see that Siri will be then kind of developed in such a way so that it can basically tell me that, oh, my apple pie with vanilla ice cream's ready, or... we could also, and in fact, this whole idea of just constantly being connected gives me another thing, because in the future, if I'm still alive, that is, I'd love to basically produce my podcasts in video at 32K, if it's available again at that time, at 32K, and then within a few seconds or even in minutes, I don't mind, it's up there for the people to see.
Let's actually, is your long-term prediction going to be whether you'll be alive in the future or not, Addy? Let's go to your long-term prediction, more the flying car, 100 years sort of thing. What do you have for us?
Okay, well, let me just pull this up here. I think basically, you see, if you haven't been tracking this already, there's a lot of stuff about the whole idea of cars that basically drive themselves.
We talk about that a lot on the show.
In the UK. In fact, one of the airports in the UK, if you watch an episode of BBC Click over in the US, you would have seen that there's a car service where you basically, it just basically tells you or asks you, where do you want to go? You'll say, I want to go to this terminal so I can catch my flight. Not exactly. But the point is, it just basically, you just tell it where you want to go. It takes you there.
So your prediction is self-driving cars.
Yep.
Awesome.
In fact, some, I mean, sure, you might have some older cars that would not have this kind of feature. But of course, the makers of these cars will be, you know, will say that you can have this, but, you know, you've got to pay for it.
So will the cars be cheaper because you have this service contract? I imagine this car is going to have updated traffic information and updated roads and maps, because if you're going to get this car for X amount of money and you have to pay a service fee, do you get it cheaper now or not?
I think it makes sense to, you know, be light on the people, because not everybody has a lot of money to spend, right? So what I say is that, yes, of course, it is going to be cheaper. Because, you know, you don't want to dig too deep into the people's pockets. Come on.
I think it's the problem with that scenario, the only part that doesn't work for me is I'm all about self-driving cars and let's get all that happening. I'm fine with that. And I also like the idea that I can just sit back. My car's a Wi-Fi spot. I can do other things while I'm on whatever my commute is. The problem is if it's opt-in and is only available to those who buy the contract, who want to pay that extra money, or that don't have a brand new car that supports this, that transition period is really rough, because you've got robots deciding it's time to make a left turn and real people reacting to a bunch of robots deciding when they want to make a left turn. I foresee utter chaos in that transition period, whenever that is. I feel like for that to truly work, we've all got to have these things self-driving period. Like, they've all got to be doing it, or none of them can. Otherwise, you're going to have like serious, crazy new accidents, stuff people never thought of, pileups that break all records. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I don't want to see cluster fails on my M25. Thank you very much. But that being said, by the way, those of you in the US, the M25 is a very popular motorway here in the UK. But anyway, what was I going to say? What I was going to say was that then we might get to a point where basically these self-driving cars might actually kill us. I hope they don't, but I'm really worried that this might actually happen, that we have cars, self-driving cars that actually are out to kill us. Just saying.
Yeah, self-driving cars that turn and on us and kill us is a fair concern, and bordering on the crazy ass prediction.
I think it was an 80s movie, wasn't it? I've seen a car that went out to kill. No, actually, it was a 50s movie. The car.
The car.
It would go out and kill people.
Right.
I don't know if it had a spirit or not, or if it was a,
whether it was robotic,
a Google X project that went horribly wrong, which I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
They predicted it in that movie in the 50s.
Like they said, I'm liking the idea of self-driving cars, but I'm like, what about when you misspeak? Like, I mean, I stammer a lot.
If I say the wrong, not voice.
No, but you got to tell where to go, right? How do you tell where to go?
Well, that's true of anything, though.
Well, I'm just wondering. Like, we were joking around in the chat room about like, insurance rates, right?
Yeah.
Insurance rates would go down for those who have this car. But what would they start looking at? Would they go like, okay, you don't speak so well, you're going to end up, you know, crashing into this
lake?
Well,
no, insurance just becomes standard. It's not the same.
Well, anymore. I think also the other thing I want to contribute to this is that also there should be some kind of switch to say that. I mean, just to press a button and say, okay, I have control now. I want to drive the car. That's why I see not
Yeah, there'd only, have to be an option like that, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, not only basically, so basically you'd have two buttons, one saying, okay, control the car for me, and the other one saying, I have control, and you can just drive around like normal. So people would still have to take their theory test and their practical test and whatever other tests you have to take to become a driver. And these tests, yes, will become more difficult.
Let's move on to the crazy ass predictions. These are really far out there forecasts. Doesn't matter what the time frame is. And Addie, we'll start with you this time. What's your crazy prediction for us?
Okay. Well, basically, we've already seen things such as Microsoft Kinect and the PlayStation Move technologies, which I'm not saying I'm fond of them, but I think they're good technologies. And what I'm seeing happening is that you get a regular computer, say, what, half the size of a normal one, further into the future. But instead of there being a normal display like we're all used to, you'd get a holographic display that would just, like, pop up, like, and then for your keyboard, again, the box will basically project something onto your desk, and then you can type. For the mouse, bye-bye. Instead, you'll be basically using some kind of Minority Report-style interface where you're basically, like, swiping left or right, up or down. And, that's how I see computers. Yes, you'll have desktop PCs and laptop PCs and the like. You'll just evolve into this fashion, which is unified and just works.
I hope the projected keyboard is better than that one we saw a couple of years ago, which was just god-awful.
The IR one?
That was dismal.
Yeah. Scott,
it reminds me of voice tech. Well, voice tech has done leaps and bounds. I don't know if you remember, Tom. I'm sure you do. But, like, let's go back a few years to 1992, 93, and all the talk was multimedia and Encarta DVD, or DVDs.
My new Sound Blaster audio card came mm-hmm. with voice recognition software that allowed me to move around in menus in Windows 3.1 by going tab.
Yeah.
Tab.
And it was terrible.
Enter. And yeah, and you had to train it.
Yeah, and it never worked well, and it didn't work well. And then suddenly, like lately, it works well. Like out of nowhere, it starts. And I realize there's more evolution to it than that. But where it's become a significant thing in our lives, whether it's Siri or it's something on the desktop or people with, you know, blindness or whatever the need for voice recognition is, that has all just made these huge leaps. And it really works. And it works pretty much all the time, unless you don't, you know, unless you talk real weird. So if that's the case, I don't see why, you know, we wouldn't see some of these other techs like projectable keyboards and these things get smarter and better and stuff as we move along. My biggest hitch with this prediction is it's got to be whatever it is. We are moving toward a portable based computing lifestyle. We're already kind of there to the degree that it can never be something that requires a booth or a space or even a cubicle to function properly. It's got to be something that on the fly, I can bring up that heads-up display, be it holographic or whatever, and I may be moving stuff around in the air, but it's got to be with me all the time. I don't think that trend ever goes away, and that will... I still think that this prediction can work, but it's going to have to be something I can carry all over the place with me.
Yeah, I actually... yes and no, Scott, I'm afraid, because yes, for people who have laptops and mobile phones in the future... I think, yes, that will happen, but no in the sense, you know, what about people like software developers or computer-aided designers who are designing rooms? They'll still be on desktops, but for laptops, I totally agree. People will just have, like, in their bag, they'll have a cube which they'll throw out, and then there's their computer right there for them.
Yeah, it's possible it wouldn't even be something you carry. It could just be implanted.
Yeah, and you're mimicking my every time on the show this comes up about portability. I'm actually the one that argues for the fact that there will always be a grounded desktop-y sort of whatever solution. It's something I totally rely on for everything I do. I can't go fully portable for the different work I do, and there's always going to be those kinds of, whether they be professional positions or positions of uniqueness or whatever that has specialized computing needs, we're always going to have something that's a little bit more grounded. But for something to take on a mass market appeal and be as open as you're saying it will be, I think it has to be very portable. And it has to be optionally portable, I suppose. I mean, you could plop down and use it traditionally. I like the idea of projecting a keyboard because that's what you're comfortable with.
Desktop in your leg.
Yeah, and your kid may not care. He's like, yeah, whatever. I like poking in the air. And that's, you're like, you know, get out of my way, old man. I'm a poking in the air interface man.
So if you
and
have
that
this,
will just change and change and change.
If you have this
Windows Air. I like the idea of that.
This cube computer that you would just throw down on a desk and it would show the holographic display and everything. Does it have any of the processing power localized? Is everything in the cloud? I mean, I would think that if it's the future, you wouldn't have to worry about anything but just having a projector, right, and a keyboard. You wouldn't need
to have... the mesh network. I mean, it's actually powered off the internet.
Oh, it's powered from the
wireless
internet.
Wireless
power. Wireless power actually comes to fruition.
Exactly.
To power the little mini cube.
Yeah, I'd love to see wireless power because then we're truly cutting the cord, aren't we?
Yeah. The cords. Finally get rid of all those cords. Yeah. All right. Crazy ass prediction from you. I, as Akhtar, time frame doesn't matter. 2,000 years, we're all made of cheese. What do you got?
No cheese.
Okay. No cheese.
But the A-list movies of the day will be the stories will be told by another species. Okay. I'm not talking about aliens. I'm talking about either like intelligent sharks or some other kind of animal in way, way in the future because they have a unique perspective. Now, we have taken for granted a lot of things. I mean, our language, the way we experience life together, we're like, oh, yeah, you know that weird deja vu feeling? Oh, yeah, I know that feeling. I think that in X amount of years, in the crazy-ass amount of years, that there will be a species that goes, you know, I can make a better movie than the stuff they got out there. And they're going to have a point of view that we've never, ever seen before. Because
but
they
that
just
sounds
don't
like it would
like
be art films, not A-list.
Oh,
like,
no, my prediction. Like, it'll be A-list because we'll be so tired of the same rom-coms.
All right.
And how many times can you see the same three-act movie over and over again? I'm telling you
apparently,
that...
Apparently, for a long time.
The world will change. Yeah. When the talking dolphin or shark is having a press conference about this, you might start wondering, what kind of movies do they make?
Yeah.
Instead of going, I don't really care for what the talking shark has to say.
I think we definitely see some kind of like version of The Apprentice. You know The Apprentice a bit like which you have Donald Trump in the U.S.? I think I definitely see, I'm all up for like SEALs, for example, doing The Apprentice in the US maybe sometime. And we'll say like, and if Donald Trump in the future or whoever his SEAL counterpart is, he'd basically say, you're a complete shambles. You're fired. Orf.
I'm just thinking that the sharks, they'll be like the Scorseses, the Spielbergs. They'll be the top A-list stuff because they just have something.
I think they do a lot of action movies. I'm thinking sharks.
The sharks?
Yeah.
Well, they never sleep, so
right.
Who knows where
they
their brain
stop
goes.
Swimming, that's what, yeah, right.
They're always moving. It's a totally different thing.
Dolphin movies are a little shallow.
I don't know. I don't know. They're pretty intelligent. I don't think there's as shallow as you
think
they
are. You want a deep movie, get a squid.
You know what? The tortoises have the most amount of experience, okay? They've been living for like 2,000 years.
Movies are slow, though.
Well, you know what? It's actually going to be a lot
of time lapses and montages.
Cost you two squid.
Ba-ding-ching. All right, Scott, I think it's time we move on to four questions.
All right, it's four questions, ladies and gentlemen. That means we ask our guests four questions, rapid-fire style each. They are not allowed to think about it too hard. Iaz knows this, so he better behave. We're going to ask him right now. I'm going to ask my questions of Addy. Addy, you ready for your four questions?
Watered and ready.
All right, here we go. What do you hope your first mutation is?
First mutation, I'd have to say some kind of hybrid between a cute baby orangutan and a cute baby chimpanzee.
Oh, fantastic. All right. If there was one current city that you would like to base a new entire planet off of and make that world theme world based on that city alone, what city would that be?
I'd have to say out of my gut, it would have to be New York.
Oh, fantastic. I would have, Vegas would have sufficed, but yes, New York is a good answer.
Well, there's a casino in Vegas based on New York.
Yeah, but in this planet, Tom, it would always be dark. You'd never see the disgusting daytime Vegas ever.
Right.
You would just be dark.
That being said, I'd like to see a New York that's ruled by, that's governed by, what's his name, Commissioner Reagan from Blue Bloods.
All right. Nice little augmentation, a mutation to my question. Third question, which would you rather surrender to, an invading alien race or the reincarnated bodies of all the insects you've inadvertently killed over the years but blown up to human size?
Well, as long as aliens treat us right, iPhone will command new alien overlords.
Good answer.
All right, good answer. And then finally, if a planet millions of light years away from here happens to spy on you with their super telescope through your window today, what do you hope they see?
Well, I hope they see All I hope they see is a very professional production of my podcast, of course.
Nice. That is exactly what we'd like them to see and interpret whatever they will from that. Tom, it's your turn. What do you got?
All right, Ayaz, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Good, then we'll begin. Question number one, what will you be doing on December 22nd, 2012, the day after the Mayan end of the world?
I will be writing on Twitter that we're not dead.
Yeah.
The Mayan end of the world is a lie.
I will be retweeting it. It's a lie.
Okay.
Question number two. With competing New Year's days, you know, there's Chinese New Year, Jewish New Year, you know, Gregorian calendar New Year. Do you think January 1st will ever lose its top spot as the most popular New Year celebration?
Yes, I do.
What?
February 27th.
Which is?
I mean, which is what?
You mean it's not even Chinese New Year.
No, it's going to be a marketing scam.
It'll be just a new thing.
Yeah, you know, like Valentine's Day, there'll be cards and stuff. New Year, 27th, February.
Enjoy the new Year.
It's better than the first one.
Question number three. In 100 years, what will be powering our cars, or will there even be cars?
100 years, dirt. It'll be dirt.
Dirt-powered cars.
That's right, because it can't be water. Water's too scarce.
Hey, hold on. I need to shovel some dirt into my car. Take a road trip.
It's an awkward thing.
It'll cost you $100 per.
There'll be maggots in your car to take care of the.
And question number four. It's the year 3000.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in the blank. Blank. It's what's for dinner. Year 3000. Stop thinking.
I'm not. I don't want to say something new. Okay, let's say snail.
Snail
is the first thing I thought of.
It's what's for dinner.
There you go.
It's already for dinner in a lot of places.
I know. That's why I didn't want to say it. Just stop thinking.
Pretty much everything you could think of is for dinner somewhere.
Well, there
that's
you go.
That's a beautiful thought.
Handful of dirt.
Yeah. Handful of dirt. What's for dinner?
I should just said dirt good. For everything.
Dirt. Also dirt.
What are you going to tweet about?
And dirt. Thank you for your four questions. And thank you both for being on Forecast. This has been a pleasure. Adi, let folks know where they can find you online, your podcast and all that stuff.
Well, you can find me online on my podcast network's Twitter at MHFTECHNET. And you can also find show notes and episode downloads of my podcast at bit.ly/MHFTECHNET. And for those of you in the UK, Europe, Middle East and Africa, we have an awesome competition for you, where you could win a Drobo. Oh, yes.
Nice.
And all you need to do, create your Twitter or Facebook account. There you go, right there. In fact, if you scroll down very quickly, you'll see all the instructions right there.
Excellent. Check it out, MHFTechNet or bit.ly/MHFTechNet to go right to that site.
Yeah.
Ayaz Akhtar, thank you so much for being on the show as
Thanks
well.
Thanks for having me. On this the format. I like
can
this.
People find you on the internet?
Yeah, well, on the lower third it says plus.is.me. That'll send you to my Google Plus page because that's where I'm actually posting stuff right now and I can redirect. So you don't have to know the actual URL because who knows what it is. I can promote something. This Old Nerd's coming back this year, so just give me some time. But more excited.
That's what you said last year.
Yeah, and it was. It did come back. That's the thing. I've done two seasons.
Okay.
I'm doing a third season. But I'm doing seasons because it takes a lot of work. But
seasons are great. Smart man.
Every Friday, starting after CES at 4 o'clock on Twit, you'll see the new beta version of Ion. We got some pre-recorded stuff, some neat little bits, and you'll go, how did I live without this before? I mean, you're going to unwind at the end of the week with a lighter side of tech news.
Thank you again, Ion.
And it's Ion stands for In Otter News, right?
In Otter and in other news. Otters can be included in other.
Got it.
All right. Ayaz Akhtar, thank you. Addy, thank you as well. Scott Johnson, thank you. What do you got to say to the people before we go?
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm looking forward to the hot new format. I think the best part will be the bikini-clad girls that come out and hold up the round number.
That may not make it into the final version. Tony's still working on that part.
All right, fine, Tony.
Tony's giving a thumbs up.
I do. We never thank him enough, but big thanks to Tony for running
you, Tony.
The boards and sort of being back there and scheduling guests and all the good stuff he does. It's much appreciated. And people can just follow me on Twitter. I got stuff going on left and right. It's all at Extra Life. There's no two ats. It's one at Extra Life on Twitter. And I hope to see you all there.
No ats. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or give us an email. The best way to give us an email is to send it to us via electronic mail, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. We'll see you next time on Forecast.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
NQ Music.
It's only
32
years away.
Wait.
Wait.
And that's
it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.